with Paul Gregory, my longtime colleague. He's at the Hoover Institution. And Paul and I have talked about this book for years. I've read pieces of it. And now that I have the whole thing, I'm completely confounded. I thought I was figuring Lee Harvey Oswald out in the bits and pieces that Paul and I had talked about over the years. When you put it all together, there are leaps here that Lee Harvey Oswald, the immature, delusional, arrogant, and extremely violent young man, he makes leaps that you can't see coming. If this was a novel, I would say it lacks verisimilitude. So let's get on to what happens next. You're back at school. It's April of 1963. The Oswalds have been separated. They've come back. I believe at one point, Lee Harvey Oswald, Marina was living at a friend's house. She'd been given a place by the Dallas Russians to hide from Lee's abusing. He came by, got on his knees, begged her, wept. She went back with him. But it's now April 63. And I believe they're living in Dallas. You'll help me, Paul. I believe that at this point they're living in Dallas. And the night of April 10th, what does Lee do that night? And what does Marina make of it?
That night, Lee did not come home at the usual time. He came home very late, and he was visibly shaken. When she noticed that he was not home at the normal time, she looked through his things and found a letter to her, which contained, written in Russian, very bad Russian, by the way, which gave her directions as to what to do if he was not able to come home. And as I recall, there were instructions about a number of things, financial and so forth. He eventually came home around 11. He was quite agitated, very agitated, according to Marina. And he confessed to her that he had attempted to assassinate General Edwin Walker, who was a leader of the John Birch Society in the Dallas area. He had fired a single shot. He did not know if he hit the target. Marina obviously was quite upset about this, about his confession, and told him that he should not, he cannot try anything like this again. In later testimony, which is important, Marina did describe the fact that he put like 2 or 3 weeks of surveillance into this. So it was a well-planned operation where he was in the backyard of the house. She told Lee that this was it. If he tried anything like this again, she would leave him for good. And which brings, by the way, an important point, which was that at that point in time, Marina would have realized who he really was, that he was, to use a Texas expression, off his rocker. So the whole thing could have ended there had she contacted the Dallas Russians and told them what had happened, and they would have reported it to the FBI.
But she told no one. She told no one, and she didn't write it down. Is that correct, Paul? To our knowledge, she never conveyed the facts of April 10th and 11th to any other person.
She conveyed them to the Warren Commission.
Right. After the assassination. I understand.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Now, a detail here also. The next month, May, is my note here, Paul. Oswald starts again beseeching the Soviets at this point for a visa to travel back to Russia. He changes his mind again after trying for General Walker. At this point, does he believe he's being pursued by the FBI because he shot at General Walker? Does he think he got away with it in May?
Well, I would say about a week after he tried to kill Walker, he moved to New Orleans. Marina remained behind, and it was in New Orleans that he was agitating for the Free Cuba Committee. So he was at that point trying to establish his credentials as a radical operative for Fidel Castro.
But he wanted to go back to Russia, didn't he, Paul? Yeah, didn't he?
No. Well, this gives you some sense of how tricky Oswald was, because he understood that he did not want to go back to Russia and would probably not be welcome in Russia. So his last hope, really, and he was dissatisfied everywhere, but his last hope was Cuba. So he had to develop a plan to get to Cuba. According to Marina, at one point he was going to hijack a plane to Cuba, which was common in those days. But the simpler approach would be to get a visa to Cuba, where he could later perhaps call Marina to him. So his move to New Orleans was really aimed at establishing radical credentials.
I see.
So that he could go into the Cuban embassy in Mexico City and get a visa, not only to Cuba, but more importantly to the Soviet Union, because he could not get the Cuban visa without the Soviet visa. Very complicated.
He's writing Gus Hall, the Communist Party, who blows him off. He's making up stories about himself. He invents a character named Hidel, I believe, which is his nom de guerre. In other words, he's deep into delusions when he's in New Orleans. He then travels to Mexico City, as Paul just evidenced, trying to play off the Soviet embassy against the Cuban embassy in Mexico City. And what we're looking at is a man who's seeking some kind of elevation in his own mind, perhaps in the minds of the general public. It's very difficult. It's very incoherent at this point. It is now the summer of 1963. At this point, Paul, there is no indication whatsoever that he's planning to assassinate the president of the United States. Is that correct, Paul? All of these random events, bus to Mexico City, bus back to Dallas, no talk of killing Kennedy. Is that correct?
That is correct. If he had been granted the Cuban visa, which was what he was after, he would have gone to Cuba and would have been out of sight, out of mind, and making himself a pest in Cuba. So that is quite significant, obviously. And he had to convince not only the Cubans, but also the Soviets that he is pursued by the FBI. He's a real asset for communism, et cetera, et cetera.
Let's get on to November 22nd, 1963. Paul Gregory, the book is The Oswalds. I'm John Beck.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.